Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you for joining me to listen in. As we often do on Local Talk, let's start out the show by looking towards the natural environment. And as you know, I'm sure, Mother Nature has something very special planned for planet Earth. On Monday, August 21st, North America will be treated to an eclipse of the sun, something extremely rare and extremely beautiful. At least we're told. We haven't actually seen one, not a total eclipse of the sun. Anyone within the path of totality can see one of nature's most awe-inspiring sights, the total eclipse. The path of totality is the shadow cast where our moon will completely cover the sun, and the sun's atmosphere, the corona, will be seen. This is the path of totality. It's a gently curving line across the United States from Salem, Oregon to Charleston, South Carolina. There are no Iowa cities in the path. Only a very small corner in the southwest of the state is in totality. Missouri is the closest place for us, and I know lots of people who have plans to head down there. States who have substantial sections of the path are Oregon, Idaho, Wyoming, Nebraska, Missouri, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, and South Carolina. If you want to look up the exact towns where the Path of Totality is going to be occurring, you can go to eclipse2017.org, and they have a complete list of all of the towns. The website also says these things. First total eclipse on American soil since 1991. First on the mainland since 1979. First to sweep across the country since 1918. So if you're interested in eclipse, you may want to go to that website. Also, a great website is eclipse2017.nasa.gov. People like us who are outside of the path of totality will just see a partial solar eclipse where the moon covers only part of the sun's disk. We'll view around 95% obstruction in at around 1:08 p.m. on Monday. The eclipse will start at 11:45. Maximum obstruction will be at 1:08, and the eclipse will end at around 2:45 in the afternoon. So wherever you are, keep your eye on the clock and take time to, one way or another, to take a look at the world in a slightly different light for a while. And this is what the website eclipse27.org says. This rarity and beauty is why we are making all this fuss about the 2017 event, and it is why we want everyone to stop whatever they're doing on that day, August 21st, get to the path and be absolutely awestruck and amazed for up to 2.5 minutes of totality. 2.5 minutes of awesomeness. Only 2.5 minutes? No way. I'm not even going to waste my time for that. No, no, believe it. Get yourself there. Get to the shadow and see something you simply won't believe. You won't be wasting your time, not by a long shot. Trust us. So that's what they say about it. However, if you're not prepared to drive to Missouri, there will be festivities in our area. Kay Puttock went to Ryman Gardens, the main designated viewing party spot here in Ames.
From 11 to 3, we have a solar eclipse viewing party, and it is just that. It's just an informal event. There's no official program, but you can come and have a few light refreshments, you know, drink a little lemonade, and listen to some songs we've put together about the sun and the moon, and then view the solar eclipse with us and with other people who are really there to enjoy it at about 1 o'clock. So we have a couple of different methods for you to view the eclipse. You can bring your own viewer if you have one, absolutely. We'll show you how to make a simple pinhole viewer with a couple pieces of paper where you don't actually look directly at the eclipse, but you use it to see the effects of it on another surface, so like the shadow. You can even cross your hands in a certain way to be able to view the shadow of the eclipse through your fingers, which is kind of neat.
You're not actually looking at the sun through your fingers, but you're looking at the shadow cast on the ground when you've got your fingers in a certain way.
Right, that's correct. The only way that you can look directly at the eclipse is with those approved official solar eclipse viewing glasses, which we do have a limited number of. So we can provide some of those to folks who have pre-registered for the event, but there are lots of ways to view it and lots of other ways to enjoy the eclipse as well.
Yes, and I understand you'll be giving people guidance about, you have materials for people to make their own viewing glasses, if that's the right term. And you'll be providing guidance. And you did, earlier in the month, you did have a workshop about that, about viewing the eclipse safely.
Yes, so earlier this month we had a STEAM workshop for kids to come and learn more about the science of the solar eclipse. It was put on by some folks, some local experts here in Ames. We have been working with the Ames area amateur astronomers, as well as folks here at Iowa State University who know a little bit more about the specifics behind the eclipse and how to properly view it. So we've had a couple of those folks come out here to share with our visitors about viewing the eclipse. And then, you know, the event is really just to enjoy it and get the most out of the experience, as long as you don't look directly at the sun. That's our main key.
So they should just enjoy refreshments and enjoy the other people here and enjoy looking at the eclipse in the right way.
Absolutely.
And of course, there's always plenty to see. I come here pretty often because I live nearby. And every time I come, there's more different things to see because of the changing flowers. They always look different. And of course, you've still got the display here, Washed Ashore.
Washed Ashore, the sculptures made out of marine debris, will be on display until October 31st. So that is a really fantastic way to experience the gardens as well and to learn a little bit about water conservation and pollution and those big issues, but also to get really wowed by the artwork. And of course, the gardens are always beautiful. Our horticulture staff is just the best, and they make the most wonderful things happen out here in the gardens. We have a new display in our conservatory, so that's something that people can see as well. There's just a lot to do here, a lot to see.
Right. But on Monday from 11 to 3, that will be the time to view the eclipse here at Ryman Gardens.
And that was Kay Puttock speaking with folks at Ryman Gardens. There are some other viewing parties in our area. The Nevada Library will be having a viewing event as well. They received 200 solar viewing glasses from the 2017 Solar Eclipse Project. They suggest you RSVP if you want to use one of them. They're also looking for people to volunteer for helping with their viewing party. Their number is 515-382-2628. That's 382-2628, or just search Nevada Public Library and you'll find information about the viewing party on their homepage. In Des Moines, the Science Center of Iowa will, together with the Des Moines Astronomical Society, host a viewing party at the State Capitol building. It'll be at the building's west terrace. The Capitol building, you kind of can't miss it, but it's at 1007 East Grand Avenue in Des Moines. Telescopes with solar filters will be provided for you to safely view the eclipse there. And there'll be an extensive educational program going along with that. And so that's to get the specifics about the time, I suggest you you search Des Moines Capitol Building Solar Eclipse, and you'll find out the times exactly when they start. I suspect it starts around 11, like everybody else. And as you can imagine, eye safety is an issue with everybody. It is never safe to look at the sun without protection at any time when any part of its disk is visible. Also, photographing the eclipse is not being advised, partly because it can lead to your eye inevitably being exposed to the sun when you're looking through the viewfinder, and partly because it's just so difficult to do properly, and it's such a fleeting peak time for the eclipse that it really is precious time that could be easily wasted looking at your camera instead of just enjoying the sight that we're going to be told is very, very beautiful. So, happy eclipse, everybody, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the Earth looks like during the eclipse of the sun. And, well, if you've joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI. I have a colleague here, journalist Dennis Hart, who is patiently standing by with a report from events of last night. Dozens of people showed up last night at the Ames Public Library to hear more about upcoming changes in state law that will affect rental properties and the neighborhoods they're living in here in Ames. Dennis Hart was there, and he now has some words about what happened.
Ursula, good morning. A couple of workshops were held last night, as we say, at the Ames Library. One of them was for property managers and owners. The other for the public. The City of Ames Public Inspection Division held those sessions. Now, the reason for the workshop, due to changes in state law, as we just talked about, the City of Ames will no longer be able to regulate occupancy based on family or non-family status effective January 1st of next year. Right now, the city's municipal code restricts occupancy to one family or to three unrelated people. Sarah Van Meekeren of the Inspection Division kicked off last night's sessions by explaining why everyone was there.
The new law states that we can no longer limit occupancy by familial status. The exact language is up there. Basically, familial, non-familial, we can't use the three unrelated term anymore. That's part of our definition of family. That's going to have to go away. So we are trying to look at ways to keep something similar to what we have, not keep anything at all. That's our goal tonight, is to figure out what the community wants to see happen so we can report it back to the city council. To date, we've had several meetings. City staff went to Des Moines and met with several other cities to discuss how they might go about it. We've also met internally, and the city manager met with SCAM. We presented some options to the city council, and the council asked us to get more input from the neighborhoods and the landlords, and so that's why we're holding the forums. The following options are things that were discussed as part of our meeting with the other cities. Ideas were to limit occupancy based on per person square footage. We could limit it by number of adults based on 18 and up. If they wanted to exceed that, if it was a large family or something like that, they would have the ability to get a conditional use permit to allow them to exceed it. We could limit by the number of bedrooms. We could limit the number of rental units within a certain area. We could establish a separation distance between rental properties. One idea is to eliminate the owner-occupied exception and also to increase enforcement.
SCAN, which Sarah just mentioned, is the South Campus area neighborhood. Now, Mary Warren was one of those who spoke out last night. She and her husband own several rental units in Ames. She said strict occupancy regulations may not be the way to go.
Iowa State is proposing a 7% tuition increase, and Ames does need the students, and the students need somewhere to live that's affordable other than these new high-rises that are being built. There's new high-rise apartments being built on Mortensen, Jewel Drive, North Dakota, and Lincoln Way, and two new complexes on Lincoln Way that still aren't online yet. And so students all don't want to live in high-rise. They want to live in some houses. And everybody's probably read the sensational letters to the editor and editorial pieces that are written by a member of the SCAN neighborhood. The scenarios that she lays out happened back in the early 1990s, in 1991 to 1993. That's over 25 years ago. And those scenarios that she talks about, where she played gotcha politics with a current member of the Iowa House, happened over 25 years ago. Times have changed. Everybody think back to what they were doing 25 years ago. Some of the people here were probably still in grade school. Well, maybe even some of people weren't even in grade school. But anyway, so times have changed. Students have changed. I take a lot of the calls for our rentals. One of the first questions they ask are, what amenities do you offer? Students, I don't think, in now this day and age, look at these new apartments that are being built. What do they have? They have walk-in closets. They have granite countertops. Students, I don't think, are interested in cramming bedrooms, cramming houses.
That was Mary Warren. Another property manager who spoke was Keith Denner. He manages several hundred rental units here in Ames, and he said the proper way to protect neighborhoods from having rental issues is to make landlords follow existing rules.
It depends upon the landlord. Is the landlord a responsible landlord? And if they are, they carefully pick their tenants, maintain their properties. And I agree with, you know, let's enforce the current laws. I mean, if it doesn't meet, if it's the building's siding's falling off, the windows are broken, there's trash, I'm surprised that we don't have an ordinance that requires garbage pickup. I mean, I'm incredulous that we don't have that. I think that would be a reasonable thing to do. I do think that whatever you do for condition ought to apply to all properties, not just rental properties. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. I've worked with the city for many years. In fact, I used to be the chairman of the Rental Housing Appeal Board in Ames. And I think the staff will do a good job in the unlikely event that they take a position that the owner of either the home or the rental property doesn't agree with. There's an appeal board that can hear that appeal and resolve it. So make it for the community, but also make one that addresses the standards, the conditions. The other thing that I think has to do with whether the property, the tenants are responsible, is the landlord and whether they check their residence. We have a program in Ames now that's crime-free property program. It's a wonderful program. It was adopted based upon issues that you had some serious issues a few years ago with the crime wave. The crime-free program requires the property to be properly lit and secure doors and windows, and that the landlord selects the tenants, doesn't just take warm bodies. In fact, I called Steve Shanker and the council members that I knew 4 or 5 years ago and said, please adopt it. I was the first one in West Des Moines that did it. I was the first one in Grimes that did it, the first participant in Urbandale, and the first participant in Altoona. And I said to the city, and I know it's been true, that they have officers that work on it, but the total amount of time dealing with crime is not any more. In fact, it's less. And I would say that it's certainly on any new rental properties, you got to require that they build to crime-free standards and belong to it. And in fact, we on all of our larger properties belong to the crime-free program, and we're inspected, we check references, we do things, and that'll go a long ways. So you're not going to apply that to houses or duplexes. But at some point, you may say a property of a certain size ought to be part of the crime-free program.
Okay, about 4 dozen landlords and property managers showed up for the first public session at 5 o'clock last night. Later, at 7 o'clock, about 2 dozen members of the general public and neighborhood association showed up for their session. And among the first to speak at that session was John Wolseth of Ames, who lives southwest of the ISU campus.
I have a couple of concerns and questions about the process that you've laid forth. The first is that if there's any grandfathering that is going to happen to existing rentals, it does not then work to improve the condition of neighborhoods like my own, which are already at a 60-40 split. So any action that is taken or resolution that is taken needs to take into consideration those neighborhoods that are already beyond that sweet spot. The second is I am very surprised that there is not already proactive code enforcement, especially in neighborhoods like my own. Many of the rental-occupied and even homeowner-occupied issues could be taken care of if there was more proactive or if there was proactive code enforcement in the city of Ames. Third, I'm interested to know in which ways the rental inspection program would fit into any calculation about occupancy, and whether or not perhaps stronger rental conditions for homes might be also part of the mix to make sure that the rentals that are offered certainly reach that safe and sanitary threshold for housing. I happen to know of houses in the neighborhood in which I live in, which I consider to be questionable based on the exterior, about whether or not the interior is actually habitable for the renters that live there.
Leslie Kowaler lives in the South Campus area neighborhood as well. She spoke up forcefully last night about what she hopes the city can do to regulate rental properties.
We're asking for a rental density cap for quality of life. We're also asking for you to limit the number of occupants. The Supreme Court of Iowa has already said 3 is okay. So if we can't do it based on familial relationships, 3 adults. Stricter enforcement, of course. But you know what? If things are not being enforced as they are, our streets are already parked up because it's Greek week. We've got 4-hour parking. Has anybody gotten a ticket yet? I will tell you, I don't think so. So stricter enforcement would be great, But if you don't raise landlord permitting fees to help cover costs of enforcement, it's not going to happen. Another problem is parents purchasing houses for their kids. I think a lot of those are not even registered as rentals because they consider them owner-occupied, even though the kids may have friends living with them that are paying them rent. That's not acceptable. That falls through the cracks. They won't be counted. They won't be counted in any kind of a rental density cap. And nobody's looking to see what the situation is in those houses if they're not registered as rentals. Long-term visitors in a property have to be considered occupants. Just like landlords want to know who's living in their properties, the city needs to say, if you've got a boyfriend who's living in that house and that car's there all the time, that's an occupant that we need to count against whatever limit you choose to put on. And finally, I think you need to put on, like Iowa City, some kind of a moratorium on rental permits until this is figured out. Because in our neighborhood, we already have one house, a lovely little house, that was torn down, and a purpose-built student house, tiny, but with six bedrooms, was built for six students because this particular landlord is anticipating that there will no longer be any limits on occupancy.
So let's sum this all up. The city's existing rental ordinance goes away January 1st. Property managers really don't want limits put on the number of people living in their homes. Residents of the neighborhoods are very upset about this because they say if you have five, six, seven people living in a house, the place could be trashed, there could be some noise problems, etc. Now, there are several ways the city could still regulate occupancy if it wants to after the first of the year. Among the ways would be by age, for example, limiting those between 18 and 55 to living in a house, perhaps by the number of bedrooms in the house, or the size of the bedroom, or the size of the house, or the number of off-street parking spaces, or student status. The whole purpose of last night was to get input for the city council. On September 12th, the housing division, which got all of the input last night, is going to have a report to the city council, and it will decide at that point not whether to re-regulate, but whether to start the process of some kind of regulation so that by January 1st, when the state law supersedes the city's law on occupancy, Ames can have something in place to reassure neighborhood residents, neighborhood associations, that their neighborhood will not start disintegrating. Neighbors very concerned about this, Ursula, and many of them spoke up last night. Just as concerned, property managers saying, wait a minute, we really don't have that many problems. All you have to do is enforce existing noise ordinances, garbage ordinances, things like this, and everything will be okay. It's going to be very interesting. I don't think the council is going to have the option of doing nothing. They're going to have to do something to keep some sort of regulations going on.
Well, this event was hosted by the city,
yes.
a division of the city council?
Yes, the inspection division.
Were there city council members there themselves?
No. There were not. These were inspection division people. A couple of police officers were there to talk to or answer questions about current enforcement, et cetera. This was a workshop. This was designed only to get public input from both sides. And they did have two separate workshops. About 45 people showed up in the first one involving property managers. And frankly, I was a little bit surprised by how few people showed up for the public session at 7 o'clock. Only a couple of dozen public members, all of them activists primarily in their neighborhood associations spoke out. I would have thought this would have generated more. There are thousands of rental units in Ames. The big issues have to do not just with campus neighborhoods. Many of those neighborhoods have a 60-40, 70-30 mix of rentals to owners, and those owners were not terribly happy about that. They want some regulations. But there are other rental units, as we know, scattered throughout Ames, including in the Old Town District near where we are, scattered in with old homes.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks also feeling some pressure here because they want to be reassured that their property values are not going to be harmed by somebody who comes in for 9 months or 10 months to go to Iowa State primarily. It's a student thing. And they don't want the trash, the noise, the police problems, et cetera. So it's going to be an interesting balancing act. This is what the council always has to do now. You've got thousands of people directly affected by Iowa State, clearly the big generator economically here in the community. And yet you've got strong neighborhood associations especially the South Campus area neighborhood, which is most directly affected by the student input at Iowa State. Those homes down there, lovely homes, virtually all surrounded by rentals. They're really wondering and worrying what's going to happen now. And they're saying not even parking restrictions, which is one of the ways the council could enforce this. You can only have three cars, for example, with three students. Well, they say, or you only have three parking spaces. Well, they say they'll just put them in the backyard. They'll put the cars in the backyard. You can jam five or six cars in a driveway. So that's not going to work in terms of numbers of cars. I don't envy what the city council is going to have to do, but they're going to have to do something.
Okay, thank you very much. It's interesting to hear that, like you said, you were a little bit surprised. It seemed like the... If you're just looking at the numbers of last night, there's more intense interest in supporting the change of the law than the resistance to it.
Well, remember that those who showed up in the first session have a big economic interest in not having restrictions.
Right.
Those members of the public, often, unless you're directly affected, if the rental unit's three houses down from where you are, you may not feel the pressure. If it's right next door to you, you bet you're going to be down there last night. Everyone who spoke last night was courteous. They all made excellent points. And that's what makes this one very hard. There's no good guy, bad guy situation here. However, the council is looking at other cities and what they're planning to do, communicating with them. As I say, there will be some kind of regulation going on. It's just a question of how do you hit the sweet spot between too much, where you're harming now those who own the houses and are managing those rentals, and neighborhoods, which are the core of this community, the oldest neighborhoods in the city, the most historic, et cetera, they certainly have a right to be preserved. And those people bought those homes many years ago in many cases. They don't want them to go into the tank because now you've got 10 students. And not picking on Iowa State students. This is primarily what it's about, is student rentals, primarily. Because older renters generally are perceived to be, rightly or wrongly, more responsible, they'll take better care of your house, et cetera. We all have those stereotypes, et cetera. So very interesting discussions last night. And again, it was on a high level with some very good points made by both sides.
And that all within the context of a problem with scarcity of low rent properties in Ames.
No question.
So
no question. There's a need for affordable housing here. And so how do you hit that sweet spot again? Well, that's what the council is elected to do. They're elected to take the heat on this one, and they're probably going to take some.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Stan Getz, When the World Was Young. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Dennis Hart, who is a new member of the Local Talk team. Dennis, welcome to Local Talk. Tell us just a little bit about yourself before we move forward. Dennis, in a minute, is going to give us a summary of the week's big local news stories from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I just wanted to introduce yourself first. You are a seasoned journalist. You're a longtime professional both in radio and television.
Oh, gosh, does that mean I'm old when you say seasoned? Well, yeah, this is a delight to be here, Ursula, because it's taken me 35 years to get here. To explain that, my wife and I moved here 35 years ago. I taught at Iowa State University in journalism and mass communication. And we stayed a few years, and then it got chilly one winter, as Iowa winters tend to get.
Oh, you're a snowbird.
Being from California originally, we said, wow, it's a little cooler here than we're used to. And so we foolishly moved away, and I went back into television and radio news. I have worked there, as you say, for 35 years. I'm very fortunate to have Worked all over the country. I started out in Fresno, California, as the youngest TV reporter on television there, and moved around the country to such places as San Francisco, Los Angeles, Phoenix, Detroit, Atlanta. Couldn't hold a job, right? Kept moving around. Actually, people moved around a lot in those days because television stations had a lot of money and were hiring people. So I was 25 years in television, 12 years in radio, anchoring radio news and writing radio news, reporting it. And my wife and I have bought a place here. We are coming back. I'm retired now until today. She's still working out in California.
Back on the job.
Back on the job, loving to be here. So we're going to live half the year here and half the year back in California. And it is a pleasure to be on this radio station and working with you.
Well, we're very happy that you're joining the Local Talk team. I'm excited to work with you. Why don't you give us a summary of this week's big local stories from the Ames Tribune?
Yeah, this is going to be a regular feature for us on Friday mornings where mm-hmm. we look at what the Trib thought were the biggest stories, and we look at their front page and review it. And I have met many of the reporters at the Trib, and they are good folks, and so we're going to be giving them some credit for what they've covered during the course of the week here. The Trib doesn't come out on Monday. Tuesday, the big story was one you covered over the weekend, Ursula, the Ames rally against hate at Van Shell Park. Michael Crum, the editor, wrote the story, which had the banner headline, Ames Rallies Against Hate. And he talked about the 350 people who were out there. You covered it beautifully on Local Talk on Monday morning. The second story about that was written by Austin Cannon, who is now their city council reporter and covers a lot of government. He works even longer hours than you do, I think, for the newspaper.
Sure
there.
He does.
He wrote the story about Iowa State University's interim president, Benjamin Allen, who put out a statement right after the Charlottesville incident condemning the abhorrent acts of white supremacists over the weekend. It was a very strong statement by the president. He said, and I'm talking about President Benjamin Allen now, he said, while Charlottesville and the University of Virginia may be more than 1,000 miles from Ames in Iowa State, we must not ignore what's happened nor pretend it does not impact us. And he goes on to say, we recognize that this was not a localized gathering. People traveled across the country to attend, demonstrating that racism and bigotry are still poisoning our country. Also, on that same edition, front page of the Trib on Tuesday, they reported on Senator Joni Ernst, Republican from Iowa, who also denounced the violence that erupted in Charlottesville. She was in Ames for a meeting with the Renewable Energy Group here in Ames. She said, what we have to do as Americans is really understand and have respect for each other. She said she was frustrated with the president, President Trump, for not speaking out more clearly about what happened. So those were the big stories on Tuesday in the Trib. On Wednesday, one of their big stories was that the Ames City Council, the night before, had spent a couple of hours kicking around ideas on how to revamp the general plan. That was a council session that Austin Cannon and I both covered. We were there for a couple of hours. Before the session started, Ann Campbell, the mayor, commented on Charlottesville, and she echoed Iowa State's president. She read a statement in which she said, I join ISU President Allen in a strong reminder to condemn hateful actions of those who participate in hate groups. She said, hate has no home here in Ames. A very strong statement by the mayor right before this workshop kicked off at the Ames City Council on the comprehensive plan. Now, before everybody's eyes glaze over when you talk about plans, oh boy, what does that mean? Every city and town has a comprehensive plan to guide their growth. Ames's plan was put together back in 1997, and it was originally scheduled to last until 2030, which was too optimistic. Because things changed here in Ames. Your typical comprehensive plan is good for 10 or 15 years. This one went ahead 30 years. And it projected, it was way low in its projections of what the population of the city would be. Because Iowa State, no one ever guessed Iowa State would grow from 26,000 students in 1997 to 36,000 right now. So the plan needs to be revised. It's a very difficult thing to do that because it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. The comprehensive plan is really your guidepost for how the city's going to grow in the next number of years. What kind of infrastructure will you put together? How will your roads look? How will your transportation look? So they're just starting this process. What they were doing on Tuesday night was not starting to make decisions. They were getting a presentation from somebody on the parameters of how to make a decision. They've hired a consultant, and the consultant looked at other cities and how they're doing their general plans. The reason for having to do this, besides the population growth, is Iowa law requires you to have a general plan and requires your zoning, the decisions you make on zoning, to conform with your general plan. So, for example, if you don't have a general plan, you can't just put up a six-story apartment building next to a residential area because you don't have a general plan, and likely you wouldn't conform with it anyway. Nobody in their right mind would really want to do something like that. So this is going to be a process that the council is going to go through over the next weeks and months. It's going to cost some money, but once they get this, they will have a plan that hopefully will be good for the city for at least the next 10 or 15 years. And among the items that they're going to look at for the general plan are such things as land use, transportation, housing, natural resources. It's a complex issue. There's no question about that, but it's something the city has to go through, and they're starting the process. There'll be public hearings on it. Everybody will get a chance to weigh in, so no worries. Nobody's going to do anything too quickly on this one. Yesterday, top story in the Trib, one of the top stories on the front page of the Trib, a state board has denied the city of Ames's request to annex about 80 acres of land east of Ada Hayden Park. The Iowa Economic Development Authority's Development Board unanimously voted against the annexation, saying that it did not include four non-consenting properties to create more uniform boundaries. So about 70 acres in that area had been targeted for annexation. They were owned by the Hunziker Land Developer Group, and they wanted to develop the property into the Auburn Trail subdivision, and they had requested the plot of land join the city so that they could do that. But the commission, the state commission, said, nope, you really can't. You can't do that one. Another issue yesterday in the paper, Walgreens, pharmacy, is fighting a property valuation. They filed a lawsuit against the city of Ames, claiming the property assessment on its Ames store at North Grand Mall is too high. Why is that important? Well, because Walgreens now has to pay a lot of taxes, more taxes, and they don't want to do that. The city assessor judged the value of the store to be $3,200,000 for this year. It's the same amount it was valued in both 2015 and last year. Walgreens says its property should be valued at no more than $1 million, $1,141,000. So they are contesting the property valuation, and we will see where that goes. And one more story in the Trib yesterday of importance to everybody listening right now, you, me, everybody in this studio. City of Ames' new water treatment plant on 13th Street has gone into operation. It is now supplying water throughout the community. There's going to be a grand opening, a ribbon-cutting ceremony on August 26th for this plant, which is on 13th Street, far east on 13th Street. But the water treatment plant is fully online. It has taken years to put together and plan. It is going to have a 15-million-gallon capacity each day. Now, I drink a lot of water, but I don't drink 15 million gallons a day, so I think it's going to be good for me and probably for you too, Ursula. So that's what's going on. Today's story, the big story in the Trib, which has not come out yet, it'll be delivered into your mailboxes later today. The top story is going to be what we led with in our discussion here. It's going to be last night's meeting.
The occupancy.
That Austin Cannon and I covered again last night. He and I are going to have to buy hamburgers for each other or something covering all of this. Now, I also took a look at some newspapers from around our area and what the weeklies. And what are they saying is the big story this week? So the Boone Republican News, which came out yesterday for this week's edition, their story is that landlords in Boone are voicing concerns, ironically, on new rental codes. Well, that sounds kind of interesting here. They are concerned. These are not occupancy codes, though. These are such things as fire codes. And new regulations going in for owners there. And they're saying, wait a minute, hold on. We're not quite sure where this is going and what's the cost going to be. So they're voicing their concerns to the city. And the landlords say they have to register every year and they're not quite sure, you know, how much this is all going to cost. So they're raising some questions for city fathers to discuss there. Another thing, and this again is the Boone Republican News, yesterday's newspaper, Board of Supervisors discussing addition to a sign and a repair of an historic tunnel near that sign. There's a crosswalk that is next to the sheriff's office. And apparently they handcuff prisoners at the sheriff's office and walk people across through the crosswalk to get to the courthouse. Well, they're worried that the signage isn't good enough and that some drivers may drive right into the prisoners. As they're shackled, they can't get across the street that fast because they're shackled. So they want to put up new signage to make sure drivers are aware, there's a crosswalk here. Slow down and don't hit our prisoners. So they're talking about how they're going to put new signage on that. Apparently, they could have a new sign up there within a couple of weeks. It's going to be paid for with a community fund, a state fund, so it won't cost them a whole lot of money.
Did they mention whether that's actually happened?
No, it has not happened, but okay. They're worried it could happen. And they say the prisoners, you know, it was a great quote, the prisoners really, they can't move fast because, you know, their ankles are shackled. You can get the picture of how that might play out with a driver coming through there pretty fast. There's also a historic underground tunnel near the this crosswalk that used to be used to take prisoners underground from the sheriff's office into the courthouse. Well, it's no longer used for that. It's just got pipes in it now. They take them on the sidewalk across the street there. Mm-hmm. Well, this is deteriorated, and it's going to cost money to repair this tunnel because they still want to keep it alive for the pipes there. So they're going to talk about how much money that might cost to repair the tunnel. That's what's going on in Boone. In Nevada, there is a big bond vote, according to the Nevada Journal, coming up on September 12th, an $11 million bond referendum that's going to decide whether improvements are going to be made to both the Colo and Ziering school properties. Now, this bond issue needs 60% voter approval, okay? So we're going to see whether that they can get that. In Colo, the bond issue would be used for a variety of new things, a new gym fitness area, new accessibility compliance things, updated classrooms. In Ziering, they're going to demolish the existing three-story school building, build a whole new main office, new accessible restrooms, new classrooms, et cetera. $11 million bond issue. Voting on that September 12th. Absentee voting will start very, very soon. And one other major story on the front page yesterday in the Nevada Journal by Marlies Baker, she was the reporter on both of these stories, is that the Nevada buses are going to have some new lighting put on the buses. And this is going to be new LED lighting so that people can see when the buses are stopped, letting kids off. You know, they put down a bar and the lights flash. Some apparently drivers can't see some of the lights flashing. They're going to put on new, if you will, high-intensity lights so that when a bus is stopped, even you and I could see it, whether we're wearing our glasses or not. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So they're going to do that for Nevada buses and maybe for Colo Nesco buses as well. Good stuff. And finally, the Story City Herald this week. We're talking about the school board has accepted a bid from Ball Team Construction of Urbandale to renovate their elementary school building for $5 million. Last February, as part of a public bond vote, Roland Story Communities voted in favor of a $9 million bond issue to improve their schools. Okay? They gave that approval. So work's going to start first on the school. It's going to begin this summer. Part of it will be finished in August. The rest is going to be finished next year sometime. Part of the project will be in addition to the east side of the school. And again, we're talking about Roland Story School, the west side renovation next summer. One more note out of Story City, and then I promise I'll be quiet. One more note. They have a school board election coming up for September 12th. That's the day for a lot of elections around here next month. They have two openings on the board. Absentee voting began this week. There are two at-large places on the board. One of them, Michaela Carlson, she's seeking re-election. She was first elected 4 years ago. And there's another candidate, Tony Hansen. He's the only one who's voting, running to replace Boyd Brody, who was on the board since 2006. He is not seeking re-election. And one more note, and this is a heart-rending story. There is a blood drive that's going to be held in honor of a Jewel toddler who is fighting cancer. Her name is Nora Scott. She is 2.5 years old. She has a form of leukemia. And there's going to be a blood drive, and people may want to make note of this. It's going to be held August 24th, that's next week, from noon to 5 o'clock, right here in Ames, the Story County Human Services Center, 126 South Kellogg. The next day, August 25th, at the Story County Administrative Building, in Nevada, 906 Street, noon to 5. American Red Cross sponsoring this blood drive for 2-year-old Nora Scott, diagnosed with a type of leukemia, and her picture was on the front page of the Story City Herald.
I guess if one would search Nora Scott or Red Cross Story County, they could find out information.
Can't imagine a better thing to do than to donate blood for that little girl. So those are the major stories around Ames and the area. Thank you for allowing me on.
Appreciate it. And again, those were the top stories from the Tribune
And if you let me back next Friday, we'll do the same thing again.
Okay, and our thanks to the Ames Tribune for providing the news.
Good people, and we're happy to work with them.
Thank you. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, but I have an esteemed co-host actually with me today. Dennis Hart is a new member of the Local Talk team, and he is a former Iowa State teacher in journalism and a long history of both radio and television journalism in many places around the country. So we're excited to have such a pro on our team, and we're excited about you coming to bring news roundup every week here on Friday. Dennis, while we have you here for a few minutes on Friday, I want to take the opportunity just to ask you what your impression is of how journalism has been changing in the last years, and what you see happening in journalism.
Well, it's very interesting. I've been in this crazy business for 35 years, as I said a bit earlier, and what's changed is the immediacy, and the immediacy has changed journalism for the worse. Because now you have the necessity on the part of reporters not just to report on television or radio or for the newspaper, but they have to instantaneously put something up on Twitter or Facebook or blog it, etc., because of the imperative to beat the other person. And we now have the capability with those unfortunate social media outlets, and I say unfortunate because they're often used for really blowtorching and angry comments. Reporters no longer have the capability on television and radio and even in newspapers to actually look at a story, think about it, craft it, put it together, have it edited. Now the imperative is, if something happens, get it up there instantaneously in some form or fashion. And often the first reporting of it is incorrect because you don't know what's really happened. So, for example, just as an unfortunate example, yesterday in Barcelona in the terrorist attack, a television and radio were on top of it within seconds. No one in the world knew what they were talking about in those first seconds. Something's gone on at the Ramblas in Barcelona, which I happen to have walked down just 3 or 4 years ago. It's a lovely street in Spain. Nobody knew what they were talking about, but if they had waited to go on the air, they would have been beaten by 5 or 6 other news sources, or 1,005 and 1,006. So what I'm saying is, the imperative to be first is doing away with our ability to be accurate. Now it's no longer important to be right in what you go on the air with. Just get it there first. You can apologize later. And I find that unfortunate, because that's destroying the credibility of a lot of serious news people. And that almost plays in, unfortunately, to what we're hearing more and more of, the claim of fake news. We're hearing that from certain high administration officials, et cetera. News that they do not agree with, news they do not like, they call fake news, whether it's right or wrong. Well, there is fake news. There are some phony websites out there. There are some phony blogs out there that make things up. But organs like the Washington Post, the New York Times, ABC, NBC, CBS, NPR, those are not fake news. Those are responsible, reportable organizations whose only purpose is to be right in what they report. So now we are getting two things colliding, and it's unfortunate. The need to be first, which the Post faces as well as NBC, ABC, and CBS, which often leads to incorrect reporting, and political operatives on one side of the spectrum, sometimes on both sides, saying, hey, anything I don't like, that's fake news. It's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. So where do you see community radio fitting into this?
Very important function. You do something, and I don't say this because you happen to have me on the air right now. I say this because it happens to be true. You have a very important function. You can go long form on important stories. You can, as we did today, the story that we reported last night, we went 15 minutes on that story. Now, commercial radio, not to denigrate them at all, they do a good job in what they do, okay? And we have a commercial station in town that does a pretty good job. It does.
But time is money.
But time is money. They would have done a minute on that story, maybe 45 seconds, with one or two sound cuts, bites from people out there. We were able to provide context because we allowed people to speak and actually have thoughts that were completable, as opposed to a 7-second sound cut. I don't want somebody moving in there because they're going to mess up my house. This radio station, this particular broadcast, is so important in the morning because you can, at leisure and with context, have important people in, myself excluded. I'm just a floater today. But serious people who know serious things about topics, and not have to get them off the air in a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. If they're really interesting and it's really an important issue on water quality, on the environment, you can give them 20, 30 minutes and actually have them outline in detail. Now, community radio, it's also it's a great forum for people who would otherwise be excluded. People with ideas, people who are who have thoughts, who are smart, they can come on your air, and I know you encourage this, and say, okay, you tell them, what would you like to do on this radio station? Would you like to explore a musical genre and have a show on that? Do you know something in particular? Do you have an area of expertise that you'd like to discuss with us? Is there a story out there that you'd like to cover? And do it in longer than a minute and a half. You can have 5 or 10 minutes on this broadcast. So community radio in every community that has it is very fortunate, and this particular community. So you have choices in Ames, and it's important to have choices. You have a newspaper that covers things in depth. You have a commercial station that can do spot news, what we call the instantaneous news. There's an accident. There's something going on here, et cetera. That's important. That's very important. But in the morning here and throughout your broadcast day, this station plays a vital role in terms of education, in terms of, yes, entertainment. You have some great musical programs on that are highly entertaining. But it provides a forum for people who would otherwise never have it. I think that's priceless. I really do. And you're to be congratulated. You put it on the air 5 years ago.
Thank you, Dennis. And I'm sure you're going to help us increase the value of community radio. Our goal really is to, as much as possible, generate understanding of what's happening.
Right.
And I think you're going to be a valuable asset in that process.
Well, thank you for having me on, and I'll look forward to being back here next Friday morning.
Okay, and you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. Dennis Hart brought us the news of the week from the pages of the Ames Tribune and from the Forum of the Housing Occupancy workshop held at Ames Public Library.
And a reminder that Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. You've just heard it at 7, noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. And remember, you can also hear it online at khoifm.org. And find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org right now. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also hear a little bit of Stan Getz, one of my favorites, with When the World Was Young. And gosh, I wish I were young again.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team.
And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. You really are, and you really do. Thank you for listening. And as Charles Osgood always said, we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.